Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friends Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Saragon. Some apologies today for my slightly odd camera angle, and also my sound is a bit echoey. I'm still getting set up after having moved house. But let's get into the first news story of today. And no, we're not talking quite yet about the US election. That'll be the second story. The first story is the march yesterday against the Bella Bill. There was a significant march that was taken by the Voortrekker Monument, led by Solidarity, it seems, but also had support from the Freedom Front Plus, from the Patriotic Alliance, and from the DA. This was marching against the amendment to the Education Bill, the amendment to the Education Act, the Bella Bill, where government will have the ability to determine a number of things over school governing boards, including school admissions policies and school language policies. The bill sees every school having to submit its language policies to provincial officials for approval, which effectively will give them veto power over it. John Steenhuisen, the DA leader, was there. He said that this would probably end up in the Constitutional Court for interpretation, although he expressed optimism that the government of national unity would find each other over this issue. This bill is being pursued by the ANC, but the two contentious clauses in the bill, I think it's Section 4 and 5, have been suspended by Ramaphosa for a period of 3 months to find some sort of compromise. Steenhuisen said, quote, "Parents know better than anyone else what their children need in school. Can you believe how difficult it will be to learn a language you do not understand? We will never let that happen in South Africa. Our children are our future. There are 12 official languages in South Africa, and we must protect all of them." He said that the government should instead focus on building schools rather than on policing language. Gaydon McKenzie said, he prayed for Ramaphosa for suspending parts of the bill, even if only temporarily. And he said that everyone must understand that if you are in favor of Afrikaans, it does not mean you stand against Zulu or Xhosa. He also said, "Zulu people must fight and will fight for their language if it is going to be extinct, and I will support them. I will fight for Afrikaans, and I am unapologetic. And those like the EFF who say that Die Stem must be taken out of the national anthem, that will never happen. Die Stem is an integral part of the national anthem and is proof of how far we have come as a nation. I'm not here to play to the gallery. All languages should be equal." He then went on to praise the Freedom Front Plus and the DA. And Minister of Correctional Services and Freedom Front Plus leader Peter Groenewald said, "We must stand up for our rights. This is the beginning, it's not the end. I say you must always be proud of who you are." So obviously a very kind of Afrikaans-centric event, and the arena was sort of blanketed in the colors of Solidarity, which are mostly orange. This prompted a rather strange comment from senior journalist Ferial Havaji, who tweeted a picture of the apartheid flag above John Steenhuisen's picture of the march, saying, "Orange, blue, and white under the Voortrekker Monument, do you think we're stupid?" The implication being, I don't know what, this is all a secret-coded pro-racism march or something? I don't really know what she's getting at here. Anyway, Sarah, what do you make of all this?
Well, to start with Ferial Havaji, I think I would call that a very immature comment. I mean, we know the history of this country. We know the emphasis placed by the national government on Afrikaans language and Afrikaans governance. But in fairness, the Afrikaans community has by and large really been a good minority citizenry. They've taken their culture and their language seriously, and they've promoted it. But I think it'd be hard pressed to find that they are in any way a hindrance to home language schooling in this country. What this was certainly I think very much a reflection of the desire to keep that situation going, to allow the language to flourish. But there is nothing in the litigation that's been preceding it against Afrikaans language medium schools, where particularly the Gauteng then MEC for Education, Panyaza, the Sufi, did everything he could to get people into school to, and to turn them into dual medium schools, even though there were spaces available at other schools that did, were English medium schools. And he basically lost on all counts, mostly being found to have been unconstitutional in his behavior. But nevertheless, you know, essentially, if they're fighting, they're essentially fighting most directly for the Department of Education and the provincial departments not to have the ultimate power to decide what the language of the school should be. Now, it's always been a matter that the governing bodies choose the language and the provincial ministries okay it or otherwise, but it's never come to that. And it's widely accepted that home language schooling, particularly at primary school age, is very important and very valuable to the development of being able to study education at a later stage, to be educated at a later stage. I think the problem for the government is twofold. One is that for understandable reasons, a lot of parents will want their children, rightly or wrongly, educated in English as the sort of global business language. And secondly is, you know, the question is, it's all very well for the Department of Education to say that we'll have the last say, but, you know, whether home language is taught depends on where the school is and the makeup of the people around it. So the chances are that in any of the provinces that have sort of very large numbers have a certain home language group, that would make a lot of sense to if the curricula and the other facilities are available to actually teach in that inner language, that would make sense without a doubt. It might be more difficult in a place like Soweto, which is very much has a polyglot of home languages. There's not that very distinct majority single language. So it's at the end of the day, it's I think for the rest of us, irrespective of our color, race, creed, or language, culture, it is a question of interference by authorities in the decision making of the schools. And the spat and the by and large appalling behavior of the GDE in dealing with the Pretoria High School for Girls alleged racism incident, which has not turned out well for the GDE and continues to be problematic, have indicated exactly why you want the Departments of Education as removed from the decision-making function of government schools rather than more so. So I think we've got to bear that in mind and leave the sort of immaturity to other topics and just recognize, you know, where it's coming from and who feels under particular threat. There was no violence that accompanied by it, and the one person who flew an old South African flag was told to leave the gathering because it wasn't welcome. So, you know, I think it's as I say, immature mischief making on her part.
No, I agree with that pretty much completely. Okay, let us go on to our next story. And of course, this is the big news in the world today, which is that Donald Trump has won re-election as President of the United States, staging what is quite a remarkable political comeback after his defeat in 2020. And it looked for a while, up until even after the 2022 midterms in the US, like Trump's political career could be over. But he rallied, he had a very strong campaign, he won the Republican primaries, crushing his opponents inside the party, and then went on to win the election. And it looks like, although they're still counting up all the votes, for the first time he will have won the popular vote as well, not just the Electoral College, meaning that very rich avenue of attack that was used a lot against him in 2016 by Clinton supporters will not bear fruit this time, it seems. Sarah, I think what was interesting is while polling did underestimate Trump again for the third time, and that's definitely something pollsters will need to really think about how to correct. Generally speaking, this was the close race that was predicted, and it just lent in the direction of Trump at the end there, with him winning a lot of these swing states pretty, you know, by a sort of a percentage point or so. What's your take on the US election?
My take is, by and large, I'm perhaps a bit surprised by the margin of the result, but I'm actually not surprised that he won over Harris, because in every respect, the Democrats got the hiding they deserved. And it probably started with the appalling attempts to hide the truth about the Hunter Biden laptop. At the start, when the last election took place, and
right at the end of the 2020 election, yeah,
and the mainstream media really played a significant role in hushing that up. Policy's been erratic, I think, in a time, and particularly in the last 2-3 years, when showing strength, which is synonymous with America. Was desperately needed with wars like Ukraine and Israel, etc. That strength was missing. So the impression was given that, you know, that they wanted hands off. I think the problem they also had is, although the economy has fared pretty well under Joe Biden, the surge in inflation earlier this year, in particular late last year, early this year, the effect on people was a different experience altogether, and by Biden as a running mate in his first term. She had done very poorly, to say the least, in the primaries leading up to that election. And when he said he wanted to appoint a black woman in position, he showed his first inklings of really going into the DEI philosophy, where merit was, pardon the pun, trumped by meeting sort of all the DEI politically correct criteria. And the problem was that she really did nothing in those 4 years to show that she wasn't a mistake. She came across genuinely as vacuous and not really taking issues seriously, and one had not a great deal of sense that she had any clear idea about the depth of the issues and what really affected people. And she very much ran a campaign, I think, that tended to appeal to very various interest groups, different parts of the population. And I think in a way, Donald Trump scored from the fact that people wanted to vote on what they thought were the merits from their own experience. And but I think particularly for men of any color, the sort of demonizing of men, as has been very much part of the accusation of white supremacy by the DEI constituency, it actually... It fared badly against her, and I think it probably fared badly against her with men of color as well. In as well, to pretend until it was way beyond the period of pretending that Joe Biden was cognitively impaired, and pretending that it only became apparent during the debate, the presidential debate with Trump, was ludicrous. I think it was incredibly arrogant to think that the thing to do was just throw their weight behind Kamala, ignore all rules and practices for appointing a presidential nominee. And she just never overcame that. And then I think, given the fact that it's always the swing states, the 6 or 7 swing states in any given election, that are really going to make the difference, because it's not clear at any point whether they would go Republican or would go Democrat. By not choosing as a running mate the governor of Pennsylvania, probably largely because he was Jewish, even though Pennsylvania is probably one of the key states, she chose someone who I can only say made her look smart, and from a blue state, so a state that wasn't in contention. I mean, that to me is sort of 101 of how not to play the pre-election game. And I think, we all live with a certain amount of trepidation as to what exactly Trump will do about a whole lot of things. So it's not as if he's anyone's ideal candidate. But I think the alienation that the Democratic elites have wrought over the last couple of years, they either pretended that they underestimated their constituencies, or they really did underestimate the constituencies and ended up with this result. I mean, Trump's not honest, and he can say the most appalling things, but that's a known factor. You know, people knew what to expect from him, so they went into this knowing that whatever the negatives were, his positives had to be better than hers, and that to me is how it played out.
So I think it's actually these next couple of weeks will be very important, because we're going to really see, I think, the formation of the next 4 years of the U.S. The Democrats are going to have a big internal fight about why they lost, and however they end up finishing that discussion will determine how they behave for the next couple of years. And also, Trump is going to be setting up his administration, and all of the jockeying for positions and power and who gets appointed to what is also going to, I think, very much shape his administration going forward. So a lot to keep an eye on in the U.S. And I think between now and January will be very instructive as to what the next 4 years in the U.S. portends. Okay, that is all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a good one.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.